Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast,
bringing you the latest from the world of sports, DFS, and gambling. With over 5 years of hot takes and millions of downloads later, I guess he's been doing something right. Now, sit back and listen to one of the sharpest minds in the game. Here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
All right, folks, it is Sunday, so you know what that means. We have NFL action on deck, but let's just talk about what we've seen in the World Series because, you know, I don't want to be the one to say it, but I told you so. You know, the frustrating thing about the Yankees going down 0-2 is the fact that literally all the pet peeves I have with the Yankees came to fruition in that their lack of defense and sometimes the hitting doesn't show up, played out, and the bullpen was suspect. Just because it played well in the playoff run doesn't mean it absolves everything that happened in the regular season. So part of that all blends into just being down 0-2 and not even being remotely surprised. It's just more annoyed. It's more annoyed that it's like, you know, again, I can't bet against my own team in certain respects in that fashion. It annoys me, but I, you know, can the Yankees still win this series? Absolutely. But literally, they got to take Game 3. And Game 3, they're entrusting to the least reliable pitcher, in my opinion, against this Dodgers team in Clark Schmidt, because Schmidt's pitching repertoire is so limited that the second time through the order, the Dodgers are going to own this kid. So, again, I don't love it. I'd rather them play Gill in Game 3 and then take Cole on short rest for Game 4 since he only got pulled after 88 pitches. Can we talk about how Garrett Cole got pulled after 88 pitches and then everything went to you-know-what after that point? Why Boone felt the need to do the early hook when our bullpen, again, was not a lock in the regular season and we put ourselves in a spot where we overextended Canley because we went to Clay Holmes. It just drives me crazy watching how the Yankees constantly get mismanaged. It wasn't even that the Dodgers have been that spectacular. It's literally the Yankees just shooting themselves in the foot because they can't help themselves. Why are you pitching to, in every swing Freddie Freeman had? Okay, let's just get back into the final sequence of Game 1. You know, just because you bring in Nestor Cortez, who is ice cold, you have him walk Mookie Betts, who he actually has good numbers against. Freddie Freeman, you're challenging Freddie Freeman with the bases loaded when Freddie Freeman has the best slugging stats of any left-handed power hitter of the last 5 years with the bases loaded. With Nestor, who hasn't pitched in a month. Can we, like, just rewind? how that even is supposed to make sense. Nestor hasn't pitched in a month. His best pitch is Freddie Freeman, like, does pretty well against. You would basically need Freddie Freeman to get overly aggressive and swing at pitches outside the zone for Nestor to ever be effective there. Yet Boone somehow liked the matchup. It didn't make any sense. Obviously, Freeman crushed the fastball for a grand slam, walk-off grand slam, which has never been done in history before. But then again, this was the first time Aaron Boone had coached in a World Series before, so there was a first time for everything in that scenario. But literally, there was no logical reason for Nestor Cortez to be in that spot. But again, part of the issue with the Yankees is the fact that they never had a lefty specialist the entire season. We went an entire year with a bullpen that didn't have a lefty specialist at all. We were using Canley in that spot. So, essentially, we didn't have anyone left that we could actually trust against lefties. So, we used Nestor in that spot, even though we hadn't actually seen him pitch. And he made it clear he wasn't comfortable coming out of the bullpen to begin with during the year. But we still used him in the high leverage spot. It is, you know, it's just so triggering watching the Yankees. Like, the more I talk about the Yankees, because, like, I know, I'm not supposed to sound like the series is over. But, by most regards, the series is over. But there's still a chance the Yankees can come back. It's just that the Yankees dug themselves such a ridiculous hole that winning 4 out of the next 5 games seems to be a very difficult task for this team, knowing the deficiencies that they have and what the Dodgers have already been able to exploit, because Tommy Edman's been able to get on base, which is one of the keys I said the Yankees needed to avoid. The Yankees needed to neutralize the bottom of the Dodgers lineup. That hasn't happened yet. Basically, the Dodgers lineup is hitting across the board. It's not like there's been any easy outs, per se, for the Yankees. The only person who had good looks in the at-bats where the Dodgers were struggling was Gerrit Cole, and you pulled him after 88 pitches. No one else on the Yankees pitching staff has looked good except for Gerrit Cole, who got pulled after 88 pitches. So, I'm trying to sound optimistic, but realistically, in my heart of hearts, I believe the series is over. Even though technically the Yankees still have a chance, we would need to pitch Cole on short rest to win this series, and we're not going to do it because of the hole we dug for ourselves by dropping the first game. By not pitching Gill in Game 3, pitching Cole in Game 4, because you need Cole for a Game 7 anyway, because you dropped the first 2 games. You're not, again, I don't see a scenario where the Yankees would 4 in a row. So you would need Cole for a Game 7. Just the fact that we're pushing Cole back to Game 5 and putting Schmidt in that spot in Game 3, hoping he's going to pull out a win. To me, Schmidt would be like the break in case of emergency guy, just because I think the Dodgers tee off on him. His pitching repertoire is too shallow. Those cutters are not going to be that effective against the Dodgers. Just being straight up honest. I thought there was a real chance he was going to be in trouble against the Royals. Barely got through that. Barely got through Cleveland. The bills coming due sooner than later for Schmidt. I'm just hoping that the Dodgers still collected that, you know, the four-leaf clover that he's been riding bails him out. But I don't see it happening. I think the Dodgers handle him, and then we have to rely on our hitting to not go down 0-3, because if we're going down 0-3, you know, there's a real chance we get swept, and I don't even want to think about that possibility. So, again, annoyed with the Yankees. Their defense, like, you know, if Glaber doesn't mishandle that ball at second in Game 1, we probably win the game. That is triggering. But the Yankees and crappy defense have gone hand in hand this year. So why should I be surprised that we had bad defense cost us a game along with our bullpen? That's literally what's been the story of this team all year long. It's just that Soto and Judge have covered up most of the warts because no one was paying attention because they were slugging too many home runs and driving in runs. But that's the reality situation. So, anywho, Yankees are up a creek and need to start paddling. We'll get into the NFL right after the break, so stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
Attention, everyone. Wayfair's Black Friday preview sale is here early. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Shipped in time for the holidays. Shop early Black Friday deals now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you got your popcorn ready.
All right, we're back, folks. Let's get after it. So for the 1 o'clock window, we have what I think might actually be the best game of the day in that, you know, Jameis Winston starting for the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. Cleveland are 10.5-point underdogs. And, you know, you're probably saying to yourself, why on earth could this possibly be the best game of the day? Mainly because of the unintentional comedy that you will get with Jameis Winston. Because there's two ways this goes. Either this is a back-and-forth, really tight contest, or Baltimore blows Cleveland out the building because Jameis will just sling the ball all over the place without a care in the world of what happens, even if it's a pick six, because he's just going to go out there and chuck. Like, that is the reality of this situation. You know, he's not going to be timid. He's just going to go for it because, realistically, this is truly his last shot at being an NFL starting QB in this league. Even though I've long maintained that Jameis should have been starting this entire time, you know, for reasons that we're not going to go delve into entirely after his run in Tampa Bay. You know, Jameis just has never latched on to teams long term. Part of it is just because he is kind of a clown at times, but he is entertaining nonetheless. I just look at this as that Baltimore secondary can be challenged. The only question is, without Amari Cooper, are we going to get anything out of Jerry Jeudy? I would think so. We should have good matchups for David Njoku. That's why I kind of look at this spot in that, you know, from a fantasy perspective, I am very much in on Jameis with Jerry Jeudy or Njoku, or you could do it a triple stack with them for DFS purposes. Because to me, Baltimore is going to be out a couple of corners, and some of the defensive linemen are injured as well. Like, to me, I think there's going to be some interest across the board in the marketplace for Jameis. Now, the general public may not see it that way, but I can affirm that, like, you know, the sharper players on the DFS side on DraftKings and FanDuel will be targeting Jameis Winston, and I agree with them. You know, as ridiculous as it sounds, Jameis absolutely could break the slate here because this is just the kind of spot, you know, and Baltimore's been dropping games left and right. It's not as though they've been stellar in terms of their performance. Yeah, it should be a bounce back, like a spot where Baltimore rolls, but I think there's a real scenario where this game shoots out, and I want to be on the Cleveland side because they're so cheap right now, because the offense has been so bad with Deshaun Watson that, you know, there's just too much upside to ignore Plus, I'll take the points with the Browns. Like 10.5 is just too wide for what we've gotten out of the Ravens lately. To me, this is bet the dog. Too big of a line for the Ravens to cover. I will say there is another game coming up that we'll talk about where I'm okay with betting the line just because of the situation. So, and that would be Detroit hosting Tennessee. Lions 10.5-point favorites over the Titans. Here's the spot that should trouble you as a Titans fan. You know, those who haven't already given up on the season because Will Levis is a complete disaster. But no Will Levis today, but it's Mason Rudolph as your backup. Like, he got no shot. Detroit is good against the run. The Titans, their best shot is running the ball because Mason Rudolph is not throwing across the field the way Jameis would. Like, I don't, like, Detroit's a pass funnel defense. The way to attack them is through the air. And even then, Mason Rudolph is so limited as a QB. And Levis is a disaster. I just don't see where Tennessee puts up enough points to keep over Detroit. Like, Detroit should be able to run on Tennessee. They should be able to throw on them. Like, to me, this is a spot where Detroit could be one of the highest scoring teams on the slate, but because they have so many weapons, it's the reason why I can't necessarily put my rubber stamp down on anyone as, like, you must play this person on the Lions, because it could be Gibbs, it could be Montgomery, it could be Amon-Ra St. Brown, it could be LaPorta. You know, no Jameson Williams, so, you know, there's Tim Patrick, Khalif Raymond, Holy Cross alum, you know, there's different guys, but because there's so many mouths to feed in Detroit, it makes it tough to kind of balance that. So it's another reason why, even though I think Detroit can outscore everyone, I can't necessarily give a recommendation in terms of my build out that I'm going to have the Lions in my main build because of the fact that they're expensive and the distribution of catches and touchdowns is likely to be spread out. So it makes it tough to kind of correlate the Lions this week. Even though I think they're going to beat the brakes off of the Titans. I don't think this game is remotely close. Like, all the things the Titans are good at, Detroit can neutralize. And most of the things the Titans are bad at, the Detroit can exploit. So to me, it's a terrible matchup for the Titans this week. So I'm okay with betting the line on Detroit because it's a terrible matchup for the Titans in general. Next up, Houston and Indianapolis. Listen, Texans, 5.5-point favorites. I'm not an Anthony Richardson guy. I don't believe in him. I think this is a matchup where even with the injuries Houston's been dealing with, obviously, Nico Collins still out. They still have some injuries on the defensive line. I still look at this as I'm taking the Texans to cover the 5.5. Yes, the Texans have won a number of very tight games, but I just look at this from the standpoint of I expect the Colts to make errors at a greater clip than the Texans, and the Texans just to be able to put this game away. So I'm okay with taking the Texans, even though the 5.5 is a bit fat in terms of a line. I'm okay with it. You know, to me, there's very little scenario where I don't see the Texans winning outside of injury. So I just feel confident in betting the Texans side of the equation here because I just don't think the Colts have enough firepower to really keep up with the Texans. If they, especially if the Texans get Joe Mixon going, I think it could be a wrap early for Indy. So, you know, I'm on the Texans side of the equation there. Moving on, Green Bay at Jacksonville. Green Bay, 4.5-point favorites on the road. You know, you're telling me I get a team that loves playing man-to-man and is bad covering in the secondary, even though they play man-to-man, versus the Green Bay wide receivers. To me, this is Green Bay all day. I don't really understand the line. To me, it should be wider. The only question is, you know, do you think there's injury concerns for the Packers? Because, you know, Christian Watson still has been banged up in the lineup. You know, that's literally it. It's like, I don't really get the line here. To me, this line, even though Green Bay's on the road, like, Green Bay could win by 10 points, and it wouldn't shock me in the least. So 4.5 for Green Bay to cover, to me, isn't the craziest thing in the world. I think it's actually pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of, you know, Green Bay showing up and doing what they need to do. But I think whatever they want to do, they should be able to get it against this Jacksonville team, because defensively, they're just not any good. Moving on, Arizona traveling to Miami to play the Dolphins. Dolphins, 2.5-point favorites. Tua's back. He's back, but he's not wearing a guardian cap, so we have to wait on pins and needles as to whether or not Tua's going to get himself hurt again. Obviously, we're hoping that does not happen, but, you know, it's hard to feel really confident with the Dolphins. Just this uncertain about the Tua situation, because, again, he's not wearing a guardian cap. He's already suffered multiple major concussions. You know, he really shouldn't be playing. You know, he got cleared by the independent neurologist, but it's almost like, you know, for his own sake of not having multiple concussions, it's like, we've seen this story with Tua before, and he doesn't want to wear the guardian cap. It makes it really hard to recommend Miami, just because the quarterback position is not set in stone as to whether or not he could stay healthy or not. So they've got him on a deal where he's got to perform, or the contract essentially gets waived. But, you know, to me, it's just not worth it for what Tua is potentially risking. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I just look at this game from the standpoint of Arizona, 1 o'clock game, traveling to the East Coast. I just don't love it. You know, there's enough red flags on Miami to make a case for the Arizona side, but I just hate that 1 o'clock start for a West Coast team, especially a bad West Coast team in Arizona where they just don't have a ton going on for them. I just have a tough time backing Arizona in this one, so I'll take the Miami side of the equation, even though I don't love the squad. So my pick is the Dolphins to cover the 2.5. Moving on, we've got the Jets at New England, Foxborough. The Jets, you know, made another coaching change. So Jeff Ulbrich is out. You know, it seems as though the Jets are going to be monitoring themselves. I just don't know what to make of the Jets, because to me, this is as clear cut. Jets should cover the 7.5, but because it's the Jets, there's a very real chance New England hangs in there, and I'm going to back the +7.5 for New England because of the fact that it's the Jets. Like, you cannot trust this team to do the smart or, like, straightforward thing. There's always a catch with the Jets. So, to me, there's nothing to feel confident about when it comes to the Jets covering a line that wide. 7.5 is a massive number when you're a team like the Jets that can't do the little things correct. So I'm going to back New England. I don't really have anything quality to say about New England, except for the fact that, you know, they at least compete. But this New England team's terrible, but the Jets aren't a good team either. With the injuries and everything else that they have to kind of substitute, it's not clear how this goes from here. But, you know, we shall see. Moving on, Tampa. Hosting the Falcons. The fighting Baker Mayfields against Kirk Cousins and the Falcons. How I see it, essentially, this should be down to the wire. I mean, the Bucs are 2.5-point underdogs, but I could see this scenario being a case where you could justify Atlanta being -3.5. With it still kind of being tied to aspects, if you will, of the game wherein who turns the ball over, yeah, it can be more of a coin flip, truth be told, because both of these teams have had issues with ball possession. I just look at it from the whole of the Arizona that it should be an interesting matchup between Atlanta and Tampa. I'm just more inclined to buy into Atlanta taking care of business, but it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if Baker pulled it out at home, especially given being a home underdog. But I think you can bet the Atlanta side equal.
You know, and even kind of going back through this all, it's like 1 p.m. Kirk Cousins usually is pretty much a money printer anyway. I mean, again, I could see Baker pulling this one out, but I just lean more towards the Atlanta side of the equation with the injuries Tampa has. But we've seen stranger things happen, especially with Tampa being at home. But I think the Falcons should have this one. Philly and Cincy. I'll be honest, this Bengals team has not impressed me even slightly. They just haven't been there. And I just keep looking back to that Monday night game where they just got absolutely their butts handed to them by Washington. That Philly can do the exact same thing. Because Philly is a better team than Washington. You know, Philly can run the ball. Saquon's healthy. The receivers are back for Philly. So you got Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown. I don't see where the Bengals stop Philly or slow them down. As much as Philly has had their issues, and believe me, Philly has a lot of issues. But in terms of skill position matchups, this is a complete mismatch. The Philly offense versus the Bengals defense. That the Bengals have to score to keep up with Philly. And yes, I think the Bengals can put up 24 to 27 points. The problem is, I think Philly scores over 30 points in this game, even though they're on the road. So to me, even though the Bengals are favored by 2.5, I'm taking the Philly side of the equation. And I feel pretty confident doing so. Because to me, this is a spot where Philly's a dog, but I'm more than okay throwing them into a teaser with New England, even in this spot, because of the fact that I think Philly wins outright. But worst case, I'll have them in teasers, and we do it that way. But you know, we're gonna talk about another late game later with the Raiders. But you know, some of these lines are just too big, and Philly's just one where I just think the line was. I get why since he's favored at home, but I just think Philly's a better team right now. And again, until the Bengals show me something different, I'm just sticking on the Philly side of the equation here, and we kind of go from there. And then, we have another 1 o'clock game. Chargers. Oh, actually, no, not 1 o'clock. We're getting into 4 o'clock games. Chargers and New Orleans. This is a weird one because you got a banged up Justin Herbert, a New Orleans team that can play some defense, but backup QB. So I don't like the New Orleans offense. I don't like the Chargers offense right now. It just looks so lethargic if they're not running the ball well, and New Orleans can shut down the run game. So this is one where Chargers are 7.5-point favorites. I don't want to bet this game at all. For picks pool purposes, I'll take the Chargers side just because the New Orleans quarterback situation without Carr has been abysmal. But I just don't trust the Chargers. We saw this in the Monday night game where it just looked terrible against Arizona. It's like there's no other way to put it. It's like that cost me quite a bit in terms of picks pools, but you know, the Chargers just looked terrible Monday night, but this New Orleans team isn't good right now without Carr being able to stretch the field vertically. So, you know, pass on the game itself for betting purposes, pass on it from a DFS standpoint. But if we got to take a pick for the picks pool, we'll take the Chargers -7.5. I just don't love the spot. But I don't have any confidence in New Orleans either, so it's begrudgingly taking the Chargers. Next up, Buffalo and Seattle. Seattle without DK Metcalf, by the way. So the Bills are favored by 3.5. Listen, Seattle's had their struggles. For me, I just kind of look at this as a case where Buffalo, even though it's on the road, even though Seattle can be loud with the 12th man, I just don't love this matchup for Seattle. It's, you know, Seattle's going to have to run the ball, control clock, and just pound the rock. Buffalo's more than okay doing the same thing. I just look at this as that without Metcalf, I'm not necessarily seeing where Seattle scores 20 points here. And my issue is the fact that I can see the Bills getting, you know, by hook or by crook, I can see the Bills getting to 21 to 24 points. And that situation, you know, I could see Seattle just not putting up points. So to me, I'm taking the Buffalo side. I don't love the game from a fantasy perspective, but I could see the Bills just doing enough. You know, it's a roulette wheel with the Bills every single week. So again, I'm not looking to take any skill position players from the Bills. No one's separated themselves. Like, even if you want to argue for Dalton Kincaid in Nashville tight ends week, I mean, I guess, but I usually don't believe in those narratives. So I'm okay with avoiding this game from a fantasy perspective. Moving on, Chicago and Washington. It looks like Jaden Daniels is somehow going to play this game. All week, this seemed like Bears minus 2.5 was a gift. But it looks like Jaden Daniels is going to play. And if Daniels is playing, I'm going to take the Washington side of the equation. To me, Washington is the better team. The only question was, if Daniels wasn't playing, Washington's a completely different team offensively. So to me, if Daniels doesn't play, you bet the Bears at minus 2.5. If Daniels plays, you take the Washington side of the equation. So look for the news late. But if it looks like where things are trending and it looks like Jaden Daniels is going to be playing today, you take the Daniels side of the equation. He's been way better than Caleb Williams. It's like, it's not close. Has Caleb been awful? No. But Daniels under center for Washington looks like a true playoff team. The Bears look like pretenders. The defense has been doing pretty much most of the heavy lifting for Caleb Williams. I don't see that being any different. Like, yeah, the Bears defense could slow down Jaden Daniels, but I still look at them. If you're giving me plus money with the Commanders, I will take the Commander side if Jaden Daniels is playing. So, to me, this is just coming straight down to the health report. If he's active and starting, you take Washington. If he's not starting, you take the Bears side. Simple as that. Next up, Denver hosting Carolina. Holy crap, these are bad teams. I am playing Bo Nix in fantasy today because Carolina has been so disinterested in playing football now that Bryce Young is under center again. You know, to me, you just play whoever the Panthers are playing if Bryce Young's starting. And it looks like Bryce Young's starting for the rest of the year, so you can bet on Carolina to basically lose every game. I'm taking the Broncos minus 8.5. Like, Carolina just looks done. No one cares. You know, it is what it is. I just don't see anything on the Carolina side, you know, outside of maybe Chuba Hubbard. Like, you get some garbage time points there, or if he gets a touchdown early, he should be good for the rest of the game because he's still going to get work no matter what, because they can't expose Bryce Young by just dropping back and throwing 40 times. Like, he's just not good. So they have to run the ball, even if they are behind by multiple scores. So Chuba Hubbard should get work throughout the game. I just don't love the spot at all. I'd rather play the Bo Nix side of the equation. Javonte Williams. Maybe Cortland Sutton can get some targets this week. You know, there's some question marks as to who's going to be the guy on the Denver receiving corps. I honestly don't feel great about Cortland Sutton this week, but, you know, we'll see. We will definitely see. You know, I just got to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, Bo Nix is just priced too cheaply against a terrible Panthers defense. You know, he can run. He's 5,600. There's just way too much appeal here for a team that's projected to score 26 points today against Carolina. You know, just give me the Broncos. I'll play Bo Nix. I'll play Jameis Winston in terms of fantasy QBs, and we call it a day. Moving on to the final Sunday afternoon game, we have the Chiefs traveling to Vegas. Chiefs 9.5-point favorites over the Raiders. Now, we have the offseason drama, the Raiders making fun of Patrick Mahomes with the Kermit the frog doll and whatnot. Yes, the Chiefs always want to embarrass the Raiders, and the Raiders do a pretty good job of that themselves, but, you know, 9.5 points on the road against a division rival that usually plays pretty tough against the Chiefs. The Chiefs don't have the weapons right now to make me feel confident in taking them more than a 7-point favorite at this stage. So I'm going to back the Raiders side because I can see the Chiefs winning by a touchdown. I have a harder time seeing the Chiefs winning by more than that just because they haven't boat raced anyone yet, in my opinion. So to me, all these games are kind of tight and close-ish. You know, maybe the Chiefs can get a late score to make them cover, but it's like, I don't think they're going to be covering, like, wide swaths of the game, in my opinion. It's like, I think this still stays closer to a one-score game throughout the course of the game, and the Chiefs, like, figure out a way to close it out because, you know, it's the freaking Raiders, so they'll find a way to lose games. But I just don't love the Chiefs' spot here. It's like, again, everyone's talking up national tight ends thing, Travis Kelce. Knock yourself out. Kelce has not been used in that extent. So, to me, I'm not necessarily seeing, like, a great value play there. Like, Kelsey's expensive. Like, it's, like, a lot of money to be put in for Travis Kelce. Like, I don't know. I would much rather just play Kareem Hunt at 6,300 and call it a day than try to force in Travis Kelce. You know, for a fantasy perspective, like, I'd much rather just force in the chalk of Tua and Tyreek Hill at 7K, then try to play Travis Kelce this week. And to me, I don't think it makes any sense playing the Chiefs in this spot because I think the Raiders play this game slow and you're not going to get a bunch of back and forth possession. So I just have a tougher time getting behind paying up for at tight end. It's like, to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense, in my opinion. So, you know, we'll kind of go from there. It's like Brock Bowers at 6,100. If the game goes back and forth, yeah, he makes sense. I actually don't like Bowers necessarily in this spot against the Chiefs just because it needs this game to go back and forth. And I could see the Raiders just kind of pounding the rock to try to keep the game close. So, to me, this isn't really the spot to be attacking from a fantasy perspective, in my opinion. So, be that as it may. So, Sunday Night Football. How about them Cowboys? I mean, geez. The story about the Cowboys and their training facility just being mobbed by their fans, just going on tours all day, every day, is just mind-boggling insanity. Just the fact that it's like, how could you ever concentrate in that environment? You were literally running a zoo with humans as the attraction. Jerry Jones is crazy. I can't. It's like, if you haven't read that ESPN article, please take a look at it. The Cowboys, like, just allowing fans on their premises every single day of the week, it seems. So the players are there, and fans could just be walking around, milling about in this team's facilities. Like, every single day. It's not just select days. It's every day, it seems. I just don't get it. Like, to me, that's the definition of insanity. Like, you're trying to run a working environment, and you just got visitors just running down, and of course the fans are going to, like, start cheering for their guys. It's like, they're going to yell at Micah Parsons and Dak and CD Lamb. It's like, what is this? They're like the Cowboys are a mess. Give me the Niners -4.5. Call it a, like, I'm not even going to elaborate on it. Like, even with the injuries the Niners have, this is a matchup problem for the Cowboys, the way the Niners play. They're going to line up. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play action. They're going to throw to George Kittle. Maybe some run plays for Debo, but it's going to be a lot of George Kittle. So, for the National Tight Ends Day, if you want to play someone, it's going to be George Kittle. But this is a terrible matchup for the Cowboys. Give me the Niners -4.5. I'm good with it. We call it a day. And then Monday Night Football, I mean, the less said about my Giants, the better. The Steelers are favored by -6.5. It could be -10, and I still would probably take the Steelers side of the equation at home against the Giants. I just don't see where the Giants find a way against that Steelers defense. Daniel Jones is just not that guy to beat the Steelers defense. With the different looks that the Steelers defense present, Daniel Jones just is not going to be able to comprehend that. I was like, I'm sorry. It is what it is. He's a nice guy and all that. He's just not the dude for this kind of assignment. This is a terrible matchup for the Giants and Daniel Jones. Give me the Steelers -6.5. Call it a day. You know, maybe the Giants score 17 points. And that's a lot coming for the Giants this year. Or any year with Daniel Jones, for that matter. But, you know, be that as it may. So, that's going to do it for us. I'm going to get on out of here. But good luck with your fantasy matchups and enjoy the games today, folks. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all major outlets.
We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah, Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.